live in an over 55 community now, and they're always talking about their grandchildren. And I am never going to have grandchildren. It is something you will live with the reality of the rest of your life.
Thanks for joining us today for part one of Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm your host, Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. Abortion doesn't just end a pregnancy. It takes the life of someone's cousin, someone's grandchild, someone's best friend, spouse, or mother. It's messy and heartbreaking by nature.
Yes, heartbreaking is an understatement, Victor. It can lead to generations of trauma that follows from one generation to the next. But just like passing down the hurt, we can pass down the healing and help prevent future pain.
That's right. Abortion wipes out generations that could have been and that should have been.
Every unborn child has the potential to change the world, no matter what circumstances they're born into. And Dr. Carol is going to show that very clearly today.
Yes, she will. And of course, we'll be able to get in depth a little bit more on generational impacts of abortion with these two very special guests. As you mentioned, Brad, we're joined by Dr. Carol Swain. She earned 5 degrees and obtained early tenure at Princeton and full professorship at Vanderbilt University, where she was a professor of political science and a professor of law. Today, she's a sought-after cable news contributor and prominent national speaker. We're also joined by Georgette Forney, president of Anglicans for Life, an organization dedicated to ending abortion and euthanasia. She's also the co-founder of the Silent No More awareness campaign. Today, we'll be able to get a little bit more in-depth on part one of generational impact of abortion with our two very special guests.
So, Carol and Georgette, thank you so much for putting your schedules aside a little bit for some time with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm honored to be with you all.
I'd like you both to briefly share your story with us. And Carol, let's start with you.
Well, part of my story that people find most interesting is that I was one of 12 children, born and raised in rural poverty in southwestern Virginia. I dropped out of school after completing the 8th grade. I married at age 16, had my first child at age 17. And in my early 20s, I got a high school equivalency, went to a community college, and got the first of 5 degrees. I have degrees in criminal justice, business, 2 in political science, and 1 in law. I became a university professor. And my family, they were Methodists, but we were not churchgoers. My grandmother involved us in 1 or 2 church programs, but for the most part, I would say that I was unchurched. In college and in my early career as a university professor, I would have described myself as an agnostic, believing one God, many paths. I had my Christian conversion experience in my 40s. And for purposes of this show, along the way, in my early 20s, at a time I was married, I had an abortion. And that occurred when abortion first became legal in the early 1970s. And I was so naive at that time that I believed that the government actually cared about people and that if something was legal, that it must be okay. And I had an abortion. I immediately regretted it. In fact, I got pregnant on purpose right after that, and I had a miscarriage, and I never had a live birth after that abortion. Obviously, I was wrong. There were clear consequences. I kept it a secret from my family and my children until I believe it was 2003. And when I revealed it, it was because Showtime was doing a reality show. And I was a professor at Vanderbilt at this time on a presidential contest. And they contacted me and asked me to do a video about running for president. But as part of that, there was a 100 question questionnaire. And one of the questions was, share with us a secret that you've never told anyone. And I shared my abortion, but I told them that because of that, I would be a pro-life candidate. By then, I'd had a Christian conversion experience. So that's pretty much my story. I can tell you that John Podesta was involved with this TV show at the time. And I now think that they had identified people who might be important in the future. and they were trying to get information on them. But after I shared it with the people at Showtime and the questionnaire, I then shared it with my family, and I eventually wrote an opinion piece about it.
Yeah, listening to you talk about your degrees, first word I think of is underachiever. Well, and a shining example to those who come out of poverty. Planned Parenthood would have called you an absolute, I don't want to use the word worthless, although you probably were in their eyes, but here's a story where abortion certainly would have been recommended for your mother and also for your children. And you've just blown that out of the water. Thank you, Carol. Georgette, let's hear from you.
My story is much simpler. I'm the youngest of four children, and I watched some of my siblings get into trouble as they were growing through teenagehood. So I kind of took note of what I was going to not do. So I did something completely different, and that was to get pregnant unexpectedly at age 16. The history in our family, both my parents were conceived out of wedlock, and later on I found out that my brother was born before 9 months of my parents' marriage, let's put it that way. So there was a generational kind of habit of getting pregnant and having a child. However, I kind of broke that in the sense that when I found out I was pregnant, I was very embarrassed. I was very ashamed. I wanted to be seen as the good girl in the family. And a friend of mine said to me, "You can make it go away by having an abortion." I said, okay. I had no idea what the abortion was, what it would do. I drove myself down to the clinic on a Saturday morning, and I remember thinking as I was driving down, because I had gone to the doctor and he had told me I was pregnant. And so I knew I was pregnant. I knew I had a baby in my belly. And yet, as I was driving, I kept thinking, this feels wrong, but it's legal, so it must be okay. Mm-hmm. Went through the procedure and then drove and spent the night at my sister's. And by the time I got out of the clinic, it was late. It was about 6 o'clock. And I remember getting to my sister's and just weeping and crawling into bed and going to sleep. And I woke up the next morning and I was still kind of weepy and a little freaked out. Like, what happened yesterday? What really occurred? And I remember as I got dressed, I thought to myself, yesterday was just a bad dream. It really wasn't real. And what I didn't understand as a 16-year-old girl was that I had done something traumatic to myself that I didn't know how to process. So what did I do? I pretended it didn't happen. Denied it. I shut it down. I tried not to think about it. I worked very hard from that point forward. From the moment I went home that afternoon, I drove home and I worked very hard to be the good girl all over again, much more intensely. And yet there was something that was off, but I couldn't identify it. I wasn't even trying to identify it. I was just moving forward as a junior and then senior in high school. I didn't have a great desire to go to college. I didn't end up going to college. I got a job in a bank. And I remember thinking that I wanted to get married, but I needed to marry somebody that already had children because I couldn't have children. Part of what I thought I had done in an abortion is I had aborted my ability to have children. So I married a dear, wonderful man that is 23 years older than me. And he has three children by his first marriage that are my age. And so we got married and had no plans on having children. He had basically, you know, finished with fatherhood. And unexpectedly, my biological clock went off when I was about 28 years old. And fortunately, we were able to conceive our daughter. And that she has been a huge blessing and a great gift. But also, at times, it's been like, how did I want this child, but how did I not want the other child? And it was something that she struggled with even, because when she was 8 years old, she learned about my abortion experience. And I would never, ever have dreamt of being a advocate or anybody that was vocal about policy or politics. But I remember her sitting on my lap on our porch, and she was asking me, well, what exactly is an abortion? Like, what happened to the baby? And I remember trying to explain to her what the abortion was, because by then I knew what it was. And I think it was in that moment of trying to explain to an 8-year-old, who clearly, from the look on her face, knew what I had done was wrong, that I became an advocate for the unborn, because I realized she understood what I couldn't out of fear. I also realized as I grew in this role of helping women who have had abortions like myself, getting them connected to healing and that sort of thing, raising awareness about it from our perspective, was that it not only do we kill our children in abortion, but we permanently impact our own lives. abortion is a traumatic experience. You can pretend it's not, but it is. It's like any surgical procedure. Your body is being violated. And we are not, as women, equipped, as human beings, none of us are equipped to be able to process that simply and without consequences, as Carol said earlier. And so my abortion was 47 years ago now. And every day I regret that I don't have that young person in my, that person, she wouldn't be young anymore. She would be in her 40s as well. But I really wish I would have had that person in my life. And I miss her every day.
Well, and it's interesting that both of you said that you thought abortion was legal, so it must be okay. And I've heard that from so many women who have regretted their abortion.
I found it interesting, too, that there is a tendency to keep it a secret. And I wanted to be a good girl, too. Well, my first child was born while I was married, and that was important to me. But with the abortion, I was working at the community college. I was, you know, getting my education, and I was married, and you know, it just didn't seem convenient. And so because I had an option, I took that option, not realizing the long-term consequences. And I don't live in regret thinking about that child every day, because I became a born-again, converted Christian, born again. And that was one of the sins I confessed. I believe I will see that child one day. And so I don't call myself post-abortive. I go to resource centers for their fundraisers, and a lot of the women there will come up to me and ask me, you know, before I speak, are you post-abortive? And they label themselves in a clinical way, post-abortive. I don't label myself as post-abortive. And I want to say that when I wrote my book, Be the People, A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise, it has a chapter on abortion. And I interviewed 3 or 4 men who had been involved in abortion decisions. They were working at pregnancy crisis centers. They had never healed. And men are the silent victims of abortion, because there are a lot of traumatized men that participated in an abortion early in their lives, and they are not over it. And while I was teaching at Vanderbilt, I had a student that started missing classes. He just wasn't showing up. I called him in, and he just broke down sobbing. His mother worked at a Planned Parenthood counseling center. And they were Catholic, devout Catholics, he and his girlfriend, and they'd had that abortion with the knowledge of his mother. He did not know it was going to hurt so much. And so I advised him to go to his priest and to confess the sin. And they did that. And then he's kind of snapped out of it after our conversation. He attended class. It seemed like it was well with them. And it's my understanding that he and his girlfriend married later. But they share the fact that they aborted their first child.
Thank you, Carol. Georgette?
My story was a little different. I became a Christian, but I remember thinking, as you're going down that list of sins, and then I remember when I got to my abortion, I said, oh Lord, I know that one's not forgivable. Oh. And so for 12 years as a Christian, I carried the burden and the sense that my abortion was still an unforgivable sin. And it was only when I was confronted by the reality of my child in a dream kind of moment, when I felt her in my arms, that I acknowledged it before the Lord and really begged for his forgiveness then, and was able to receive it. But I think that regret for me is due to the fact that in some ways it's catapulted me into this work. And this work is so hard and so painful to listen to the stories daily. You know, when we started the Silent No More Awareness campaign, we didn't really know where it would go and how it would come together. But the fact that every day we live into other people's pain because we're trying to change the course of history and the course of people's pain. It's that place where I think to myself, I'd really rather have that person in my life and do a different job. But Lord, okay, this is where we've got it. So this is how we're going to glorify you, because you have forgiven me and I am set free from that pain.
Well, you know, everything happens for a reason. And so had you not had that experience, you would not be able to do what you do. Mm-hmm. And I want to share with you a friend of mine named Mary Poplin wrote a book with Mother Teresa about her experience with Mother Teresa. She's an evangelical Christian, and she had been a feminist, more feminist than me, and she'd had 2 abortions, and she came to Christ in her 40s, I believe, as well. she could not forgive herself for her abortions. And she was just every day, you know, weeping, asking God for forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. And she was at a silent retreat. She said she was walking down a path and she heard a male voice in her head, like, who are you to not forgive someone I've forgiven? And she said, she knew it was the Lord. Lord, who have I not forgiven? And basically God said, it was you. I forgave you the first time you asked.
Wow.
Sweet words.
And you know, that's all the more reason for pastors to speak out on abortion from the pulpits and let people know, fathers and mothers of aborted babies in those churches know that here is where you'll find hope and forgiveness and healing. And when they talk about all the other issues and not abortion, you know, that's when these parents, grieving parents, would logically think that there's no forgiveness for abortion.
You're right. And the thing is, I read a statistic. I don't have it at the top of my head, but let's just say a third maybe of church women have had abortions, or women in America, huge percentage of them that are kept it a secret. And so the church is full of walking wounded people. And I've spoken at a few churches and I've shared my abortion story, and I've had women come up to me, you know, some of them with tears in their eyes, that they're walking around with all these secrets, and they need to be released.
Georgette, you mentioned your family history. To your knowledge, was there any abortion in your family prior to yours?
Thanks, but that's a good question. To my knowledge, there wasn't. What's weird is my parents have both died. And now, as we've gone through their house, we've found some weird things. Like, there's a diamond ring that I found. And it's like, that my mom loved diamonds and rings, and she never claimed this ring. She never wore this ring. So I'm like, where did this ring come from? So there are secrets and things, like Kara was saying, that, you know, that we carry around in families generationally. And so there's a lot of things I did know about our family. And because my mother was an immigrant from Nicaragua, I kind of know her history and my aunt's history pretty well. But I don't believe there was any abortions in our family. And in fact, I know in my father's side, there were people raised as siblings that were actually children of some of the children, if you will. I'm trying to be gracious here with my family dynamics still. But the other side of it is that my aunt that counseled me to have an abortion, I found out just this year when she got pregnant, she went to a Catholic home and had the child and placed the child for adoption. Mm-hmm. I never knew she had had that child or placed that child for adoption. And this year that child found her and they've been reunited. And I've gone through a great deal of emotion thinking to myself in terms of, why would she have counseled me to have an abortion when she had placed that child for adoption? And I haven't spoken to her yet. And I've been praying about calling her about this whole thing, because I sense it's probably part of the reason why we don't talk and we haven't had a relationship as I would like us to for a long time. But I don't think there's any other secrets about children, but I might be surprised, because I already have been once this year.
Well, let me say this. I have a friend that's an ardent feminist and her mother's conservative Christian. And she said that what was her mother and all those women doing running to the doctor getting D&Cs? And that they just didn't call them abortions. And I can remember as a young girl that there were certain, I guess you call them herbs, or certain types of black cohosh or various things that people were told that if your period is late, you take this, if your period's late. I don't know if that worked, but I think that upper class women got D&Cs through their doctors, which would have been an abortion, but it wasn't called an abortion. Their periods were late and they got a D&C.
Carol, same question for you. Do you know if there was any family history of abortion prior to your own?
No, I mean, abortion was not something that became an issue until it was legalized. As far as I know, that people used the home remedies. If they didn't work, they had the child.
Let's start with you, Georgette. I'd like to ask you both the same question. Do you believe that abortion has a generational impact or trauma?
I do. It's not my own story, but actually there's been multiple women that I've counseled and that I've talked with and walked with that talked about the fact that their mother had an abortion. And just when the mother found out their daughter was pregnant, just defaulted to that as a solution. And so they took their daughter. And then that mother, when she went on to be a mother, took her daughter. And when one of them healed or sought healing, it was lovely to see how the other women began to then seek healing. So just as the one person in a family can precipitate additional abortions throughout the generations, one person's healing can precipitate healing as well.
Well, before we move on to Carol with the same question, Georgette, you made a comment to me in an airport. We had been at a meeting in DC of pro-life leaders, and we were sitting in the DC airport waiting to catch our flights. And we had had a light conversation in a very somber tone. You said that as my friends are celebrating their grandchildren, I realize now that my grandchildren aren't there and I grieve for them also. And that was a stunning statement to make.
And you can tell I still get our daughter that we have. She's 35 and she's basically declared she's not having children. So for me, I have a good friend, a very dear friend, and she has 7 children. And one day I was doing something related to how old my child would be. And I realized that my child would be the same age as one of her daughters. And when I walked in to her daughter, that would be my daughter's age, I walked into her wedding and I happened to catch a glimpse of her out the side as she was in the, you know, the bridal room. And I burst into tears because I realized I would never experience that with either of my daughters now. Because my daughter has decided she's not getting married either. But the thing that then became the next piece of it and where I carry it is as Jacqueline has had her children, I see what I miss. I just saw a picture of her youngest son getting ready for school on Facebook. And it's that night. I'm with women all the time. I live in an over 55 community now. And they're always talking about their grandchildren. And I am never going to have grandchildren. I mean, my husband's grandchildren, but they're not mine. They have their own grandmother. So it can score and dab in different ways and different angles that you don't think about, especially when you're 16 and afraid. But it is something you will live with the reality of the rest of your life.
Carol, I'd like to ask you the same question. Do you think that abortion can lead to generational trauma?
I suppose that it can. And, you know, I have all these abortion stories. I would tell you one that one of my Vanderbilt students shared with me, that her roommate got an abortion and she said it's nothing, you know, that this is, you know, it's not an issue at all. But she also shared that every time she's with a baby, that baby looks at her like, I know what you did. And mm-hmm. She's haunted by the faces of believing that these babies are looking at her, accusing her. And I just thought that was so interesting. Even though she thinks that there were no consequences, she can't look a baby in the eye.
What a burden. I want to thank you both for your input today.
Thank you.
Great to be with you all.
Well, Victor, one of my favorite parts of part one is that we heard stories of people who faced abortion, chose abortion, and then realized it was the wrong decision and made a traumatic impact on them for their lives, and they have seen how it affects future generations. I was really struck by how Dr. Carol was born into poverty and rose above it, achieving things that most Americans would never dream of achieving. And this just goes to show that, you know, we choose life, we point our compass toward that and just make all the best we can out of our lives, surprising the critics.
That's right. Well, you know, these two guests are both individuals who have routinely made practice of surprising the critics. And to hear their stories, Brad, I know they were impactful to me, certainly impactful to our listener as well. To hear the stories from both of these women and to hear how abortion can be traumatic, not just for the mother and not just for the father, but generationally, the damage that can go and how it's affecting our entire country, our communities, has really been eye-opening.
And they have a lot of good advice for young people who may find themselves facing an unexpected pregnancy. they give a larger context to that problem that should make a dramatic impact on the decision of those contemplating abortion.
And I want to encourage you, our listener, to make use of the resources that we've put together for you on our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find resources from our fantastic guest today. You'll also find more testimony and more stories about the generational impact that abortion has. Again, I encourage you to make use of those resources, share them with friends, family, church members, whomever, and that's available once again at lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for part two of this Straight Talk on Life Issues.